Unemployment is really hard work. When I became unemployed, I was confused because the usual stories around persistence and effort and things just working out didn't match my experience at all. Unemployed people are stereotyped as ne'er-do-wells, layabouts, good-for-nothings, or bludgers, but is that true? In this series, I'll be chatting with 5 unemployed and underemployed people about how they got there, what their lives look like day to day, and why the usual stereotypes don't explain much. And you're on 3CR Radical Radio listening to Lives of the Unemployed, a show about what it's like to be unemployed. Today, I'm chatting with Nikki, who is a survivor of the gig economy and a helper at Camp Sovereignty. Welcome to 3CR, Nikki.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you here. Let's start before the beginning. So can you tell me about your family's employment situation as you were growing up?
Yeah, so my family's from Iran and we're the first people, I was the first one born here. So obviously there was a bit of a struggle with like learning the language and all that, but they worked pretty general jobs, like together it was a fine income for like a family of what it was for. Mm-hmm. My dad was a technician for a bit of time. He always did like electrical stuff. Mm-hmm. And my mum always did admin work from what I remember.
And how was work talked about in your household?
It was always kind of pretty serious. I feel like my parents used it a lot to be like, we're working, it's important, you know. Mm. And as soon as I turned 15, like before, like when I was 14, mm-hmm. We went up to like our local supermarket or whatever, like all the stores. And my mum was like, hey, can she work here, you know, like, can we get a job? And, like, she forced me to work, like, the day I turned 15.
Yeah, like, the basic minimum
literally
age.
The day I turned 15, because it used to be 14, 9 months, but now it's 15. Mm-hmm. And then, like, my manager that I worked for, she was like, you can work the day after your birthday, it's okay. Like, you don't have to work on your birthday. So we started the day after. I worked at NQR, which is, like, the reject shop, but cheaper.
And yeah, like, it's kind of like cheaper by miles.
Yeah, totally. Like that. But really, I don't know, funny, weird vibes.
So that was your first job and you got it because your mum insisted, because work was like a very serious thing in your household.
Yeah, as soon as, because like my mum paid for my daughter and all that, like mm-hmm. normal things a teenager would have, I guess. And then, yeah, she just was like, you have to work. You're paying for everything on your own now. And I was like, okay, great.
At 15 years old.
Yeah.
Did you grow up with the impression that there was like a normal path that you had to follow?
I think so. But I think that I actually started working a lot faster than a lot of the other teenagers around me, like classmates or whatever, because I was like told I had to, because maybe I don't know if they were trying to set me up to be like really work involved. But I mean, it did teach me some skills. It taught me that I do not like retail.
How did your career unfold after that? What happened after NQR?
Oh my God, after NQR, oh my God, my manager, I worked there for like 3 months, you know, $13 an hour, absolutely horrible. Only brown person there as well. It was like the area we live in is pretty white, like at the time. It was a pretty weird space. But also I wasn't woke enough, I feel like, to really understand how I felt in that space yet.
Yeah, but you just knew that you felt
it was odd,
uncomfortable.
Yeah. And then like there's a baker like only a few doors down from NQR. Mm-hmm. And then one day my manager was like, hey, we can't afford to pay you anymore. So we're like, it's like not in the budget or something. I don't know, something like that. And then was like, basically all the money like made from the store like goes back into your pay. So like we can't afford that, which I'm pretty sure that's not actually how it works anyways. But she was like, we're going to have to let you go. And in my head, I was like, yes. But yeah, I was like, okay, fine. And then literally like a few days after, I did see that bakery, if you doors down, was hiring. But I literally was just like, hey, I need a job. And they were like, sure. Yep. And then I started working there for a few months. Mm-hmm. I also don't like hospitality. It was a pretty crazy runch lush, like for like, I was the only 15-year-old and it's all like 20 to 30-year-olds, I guess, working there. Uh-huh. And they're all like adults in my head. They're all pretty serious. They have real lives. They're paying, like, they're getting money so they can take care of their children. And mm-hmm. I'm there, like...
And they're still going to school, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So I'm, like, just, like, stressing out, like, giving people the wrong pie. I don't know.
So you're feeling like you don't belong there. Like,
yeah, it's definitely not my element. Yeah.
Mm, mm. So what happened after the bakery job?
After that, I had to quit because I was moving a lot and leaving my family and all that. So what happened after that? What job was that? I got a text message while I was working at this bakery. Oh, my God. I have so many jobs. I'm just thinking now. After this bakery, I got a message while I was working there from a gelato place that I had applied to.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, I responded and I was like, hey, are you guys like still looking like for work or whatever? Do you need like someone? And they were like, we sent this message like months ago. Why didn't you respond? I'm like, oh, I totally just didn't see it or anything. Like, and then I went in for like an interview, but it was really botched. It was like, I went and I was like, hey, this is me. And they were like, okay, like, can you like they were making the gelato and they're like, oh, can you like do hospitality? Like, can you just like, do you have customer service? I was like, yeah. And they were like, okay, you're hired. And that was the third job saga. Yeah,
so like you've learned that you don't like retail and you've learned that you don't like hospitality. So
everything.
Yeah. So why did you go into the gelato job?
Well, like when I mean like hospitality and retail, I think if it's like maybe a brand you like or like the vibe of the store or like actually something you're into, like if it was a clothing brand that I really liked or something that I was passionate about, I'd probably love it. But also the people around really affect the workspace, like how you like it. Because in NQR at least, it was all like white women, I guess, and just like people that aren't nerds as well. Or, like they're really your basic white woman vibes.
Yeah.
So it was a bit...
It was a bit of not like a culture odd. Fit.
Yeah, I guess so. But that's kind of what it felt like growing up anyways in such a weird white place.
Yeah, you just felt like those are the only jobs available to you?
Yeah, really. I mean, like, what does like a 15-year-old think they can do? Like, I really had nothing on a resume. That was my first job.
It's just the customer service is such a specialized skill to make someone feel welcome and happy to a stranger that you've just met in a situation where you want to sell them something.
I don't know if it was two jobs after this gelato place, but it was another gelato place. And these two guys were so stressed out. These millionaires, by the way, somewhere in near the city.
An ice cream shop?
They opened a gelato store next to their restaurant.
Okay.
And they were so obsessed with customer service. Like, they were so on us for, like, anytime anyone entered the store, we had to scream. We had to be like, oh, my God, hi! And, like, ask them every question on planet Earth. And all these customers were like, thanks, I'm still looking at the menu, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I would never go into the ice cream shop ever again.
Yeah.
If that happened
to me. It felt, like, pretty forced and aggressive. But, like, we also got a lot of, like, good reviews because we were being really nice and pretty and whatever, you know, yeah. They're pretty exaggerative on the being welcoming
like
on that.
These guys like read a LinkedIn post about how to interact with humans.
Yeah, and they already have a restaurant. Like, you'd think they'd know how to do like customer service training with teenagers, I guess, but they were just really on one about the vibe of the store being super bright and welcoming and fun, and so we have to have the exact same energy. Yeah, but I think also being like 15 and undiagnosed or like not knowing you're autistic or neurodivergent is really hard to work in those spaces and keep a good vibe, like stay happy
because you're overstimulated
and like you're super overwhelmed and you like scan something twice by accident and then you have to like delete everything or whatever, like, and as a first job and not like being prepared and knowing what's going to happen can be like really overwhelming, like in every space, especially busy spaces that you're working at.
And throughout this time, did you feel like you were working towards something, like you had a goal in mind, like I really want to be a millionaire ice cream owner in the future, or is it just like I need money, I need to survive, this is how the money happens?
Yeah, like as much as we all say on our interviews and our resumes to all of our
employers
that we're passionate about ice cream or we're passionate about retail or that this is what our life is going to lead to, that we want to be a manager of a store. Realistically, as a 15-year-old, I was just saving money. Like I remember when I made my first $1,000 and I had that all saved. It felt like so much, and then you think about it now, it's like not really that much. But it still feels like so much from $13 an hour, $13.10 like an hour. hour.
Yeah, because at the time your parents like, all the bills are on you now. You're responsible.
So I'm like, oh God, I need money. But also I wasn't allowed to spend it. Like, I think I was allowed to spend money at, like, the canteen at school, and that was it. Yeah. Like, I remember only being allowed to, just save. Wasn't really, in my brain, I don't think I was really thinking to save towards anything, but at least now, or at least when I was, like, 16, I wanted, like, I think the first thing would be, like, a car, probably, or something.
Yeah, totally. Something to get you out of there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Did you have, like, ambitions for the future? Like, in the future, did you want to be, like, I don't know, a bone collector or...
Bone collector?
I don't know what a job
is. No, that's awesome.
What's a real job?
What is like a real job? That's a great question. What's a real job? I think in high school, I had a few different ideas. Like, I remember I wanted to be a lawyer, like, only for a little bit, though, because I'm good at arguing.
Mm-hmm.
And reading. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe that would be fun, but that is way too complex. But anything else was more just anything creative. Like, I don't think of, even when I was like in primary school, I only ever wanted to be like an artist of some kind, like some sort of creative role. Like, there was never a real job other than like when I joined cadets and like they like manipulated you into wanting to join like the Air Force or something.
Yeah, tell me about the cadets. How did you get into that?
So when I was still with my parents, I was 14 or 13. I started just looking up army stuff. I don't know what it was. I was really into camouflage for some reason.
I mean, sometimes kids like things.
I just kind of had a hyperfixation, I think, like when I was like 10, and it just kept going. And then I was like searching up like army stuff or like out of school programs, because I was also like forced into a lot of after school sports and programs, and I quit all of them because it was nothing that I wanted to do at least.
But you had to do something.
I had to do something. I had, like, I just had to. So when my friend that I knew also was talking about how she's already in cadets and she does Air Force cadets, I was like, oh, cool. I was looking at Army cadets. Like, is that cool? And she's like, no, join Air Force cadets. You can join me. And I'm like,
because she was already part of the cult.
Yeah. And I was, yeah, exactly. And I was like, yeah, sure. And then I realized that we're not even going to be in the same squadron because we don't live near each other. So you have a base that's closest to you, basically. So I started doing that, and you get your uniform, super strict hair and makeup rules. And
Even if you're just a cadet.
Yeah.
You got into the whole
everything.
Thing.
Glue your hair down, like every gelatin hairspray, like crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's a single thread on your uniform, you got to sniff it off or, like, iron it flat. And learning to march, that's, like, the biggest thing you learn. Like, I still remember how to do it because it's, like, muscle memory. Mm-hmm. Like, marching, it's way more... what's the word, complex, important than you'd think, like, not that I'm praising cadets in any way, but like the whole order of it is very, there's like a whole manual,
like it's really,
you know,
significant.
Yeah, exactly. That's the word. I got my rifle license in cadets, so I shot a rifle. Shot 45 rounds. That's all you have to do to pass and get your license or whatever, but it's only in cadets. That was probably, like, the most stressful day of my life. Like, I never want to shoot a rifle again. Like, I think I was still 14 when I got it, but it was just so stressful. Like, a real person from the army would come and test us, like, just do the test for us. We just have to, like, name all the things on the gun and, like, and then shoot it at, like, paper. I don't know. It was... That was a bit much.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like that's something that would, like, really lead you down a certain path.
Absolutely. Like, imagine all the 13-year-olds that are, like, being advertised this and they're glamorizing, like, flying planes and, like, weapons. And we do a lot of history class as well. There's still a lot of, like, writing and reading. You have to do, like, theory work. But, yeah, it's pretty intense when you think about it. Like, the lifestyle you live really completely changes because we also, like... can't wear your uniform in public, you know, like you can't, you just change the way you think in your daily life, but it's not like really in a good way. It's more just like, it feels like you're being indoctrinated. Like it's like the life of like someone in the defense force, but not in the most positive way. Yeah. I also flew a plane like twice.
Cool.
With a co-pilot. I only did some steering and stuff.
Yeah.
That was kind of scary, but, made me realize I didn't want to do that either. But I think just being in cadets made me want to do something in the Air Force. Like, but not because it wasn't a real passion of mine. I just wanted to, like, because I was in it, I was like, I guess that'll just be the job that I do. But if anything, I'd like to work with the dogs in the Air Force or something. Like, at least that's something I like. But it was nothing I'm actually passionate about.
Yeah, but then you didn't do it. How'd you get out?
Yeah, so I moved into foster homes and stuff when I was 15, and then I, like, skipped cadets for a month. You're supposed to go weekly. Like,
it's a big commitment.
Monday night, yeah, for, like, 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And I came back once, and I was like, what am I doing here? Like, I know it's been a month of massive change, but this is weird. Also, the whole time I was there, people were super sexist, super racist, like... Mm. Oh, it was just so, like, they normalized that in the space. Every time I reported something, no one cared, you know?
Mm.
Like, I was like, this is insane. I don't know what I'm doing here anymore. I'm leaving. Like,
getting that little space away, that little holiday, made you come back and realize just how strange it was.
Yeah, like, having to, like, go to court and do these other things really, like, makes you wake up. But also, like, I just realized that, like, so we have adult volunteers that, like, run cadets for us at our squadron, and they were, like, They were just, like, so mean in a way. I didn't want to be there anymore. Like, in not even just because I didn't like it, but it was, like, just a negative and uncomfortable space as well. Yeah. And they made it that way. You get yelled at 24/7 in cadets. Like, anything you do, they scream your name. And you have to be like, yes, sir, yes, ma'am.
Part of that psychological stuff.
Yeah, and it definitely, like, trains you to be, like, an animal, like a pet in my head. Like, it's pretty degrading. I know it's normal, but it shouldn't be. Like, in the Defence Force, it shouldn't be normal that you're all lined up and they scream at you and they, like, get mad at you if your shoe's not shiny enough. Like, that's literally what happens. Like,
it's abusive.
It really is, but they water it down into a way where it's like, oh, it's just Defence Force stuff. We're preparing you for how crazy it'll actually be in the Defence Force.
Yeah, if it's, like, a stranger on the street did that to you, or, like...
That's literally what it was, though. We didn't know half these people. Like, you don't really get to know all of them. Yeah, it's just random adults, and people only a year older than you could have a super high rank, so they get the authority to just be yelling at you.
Let's take a little break for the announcement of a community service, and then let's listen to a song, and we'll get into the rest of your working life. Do you want to announce the song that you brought in?
Yeah, The Deep by Telenova. They're, like, my favourite band.
Perfect. Great.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
that was The Deep by Teletype. You're listening to a short summer series called Lives of the Unemployed on Radical Radio 3CR. My guest is Nikki, who has had a lot of experience with on-again, off-again employment and is a helper at Camp Sovereignty. Let's get into the present day. So how did you get into your current situation?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like no matter how unemployed I am, if I was employed, I'd be way more stressed. I do so much now without having a job that, like, I think I'd implode. You know, like, I do, like, panels at conventions for people of colour, like, in the nerd space to talk about their experience with, like, cosplaying and how stereotypical and racist it can be.
Cool.
And also, like, I'm currently running a film club for teenagers. And I'm also hopefully doing an internship with someone in the music industry. And I'm also trying to run another festival and all these things. So,
So what does a typical day look like for you?
Well, to be honest, sometimes it's not super interesting, but tomorrow I'm doing a big meeting with our film club members. So we're going to start working on a film eventually, hopefully. And that'll look like getting up, you know, finalizing some documents for the day and, like, meeting up with my team and then talking to about 50 people about just film stuff, basically.
How do you juggle this stuff with, like, the mutual obligations, the job providers stuff that we have to do?
Oh, yeah. Well, to be honest, like, it is really taxing, like, having to be able to deal with all the Centrelink stuff as well and Workforce Australia and all that when they're, like, constantly harassing you with emails. Like, every time, like, in my MyGov app, I get a new inbox, I get so scared that they're about to, like, take away my Centrelink for some reason, which they've done, like, 10 times now. Like, they'll make up a reason and be like, oh, sorry, it's because we accidentally put you on, like, Job Finder instead of Youth Allowance or something because I still count for it. Like, it's just really stressful and annoying, but... Like, I think personally, I like to be really occupied. I'll go insane if I'm alone. I'm an extrovert. I like getting my energy from being around people. So I think that I need that personally, at least, to keep going, having something to do.
Has being unemployed or underemployed changed how you see yourself? Like, it seems like it's kind of been, like, a positive difference for you.
Yeah, because I always thought that I'd have to get a job and that I'd be ashamed to not have one. Like, I feel like that's a stereotype you have.
Totally.
In high school, or even as an adult now. But literally being in activism, no one has a job. Like, it's very common jobs that people share. Like, or people do mutual aid work where they may get, like, a bit out of it or something. Like, yeah, it's really more, like, I see the world way differently now. Like, without a job, I see people doing trades of experience or knowledge or learning, like, or just mutual aid work in general, just helping people out. Like, that's more important. Like, that's more gratifying than anything, like, than employment, I feel like.
So you're surrounded by people who are doing work, but they're just not getting paid for it.
Basically, but it's for community, so yeah.
Or they're not getting paid in money. They're getting paid in karma, spiritual benefit.
Yes.
Or community benefit.
I also like freelance makeup, like, but I like to do it for free because there's a lot of people who can't afford makeup. Like, people in Melbourne charge $200 for your makeup and hair, which is bizarre. I know products are expensive, but that is a lot of money. Like, I would never pay for my makeup to be done, like, if it costs that much. So, I mean, I do do that as well, like, for artists and just people generally, just so they have something fun. Maybe they have a graduation or an event, you know. But I also don't think that we need to be paid to do all of that if it's community work. Money is just a concept. It's a stupid construct.
And what do you describe what you do when someone asks, what do you do?
Oh, my God, that's a loaded question.
Yeah. Do you still have feelings about it, even though you're doing so much and you're contributing so much?
I don't, like, I used to probably get upset and be like, oh, I'm unemployed. But now it's more like, oh, Centrelink. I don't know. Like, I'm doing, like, what's currently going on. I'm doing this film stuff right now. You know, like, it doesn't feel like everyone around me doesn't have a job or, like, only does really partial social work or something, like, once a week. Like, it doesn't feel like it's actually a big deal, like, at all to do it.
Yeah.
To say anything, you know.
Yeah, because you've got, like, a good supportive community around you.
Yeah, it's really destigmatizing.
So what parts of unemployment do you think are, like, invisible to people who haven't experienced it?
What do you mean?
Like, if someone hasn't been unemployed before, if they've had, like, a stable job,
and
they found themselves unemployed, what would they be surprised by?
Like, you can chill out for a second. Like, you can calm down, you know, like, it's actually fun and relaxing. There's less stress on you. But I guess also someone who has worked so many random jobs, I can see their perspective. Like I'll look at someone working and I can feel bad for them.
Because so many people are like terrified of being unemployed.
Yeah. And like, I feel like people need to realize like it's not that deep. Obviously we have bills to pay for sure. But if you're able to step back for a second and relax, then you might actually like have time to enjoy things, you know, that you might not have before when you have to, when you're working full time or something, you know.
If someone else were to become unemployed right now, what advice would you give them? What would you want them to know?
That you'll be fine. If you need a job, you can keep applying. But if anything, like just indulge in a hobby or something you missed out on, or try and like hang out with people you haven't seen in a while. Like I feel like that's how you can be happy if you can't throw yourself into work.
All right. Well, let's finish up. You've been listening to Lives of the Unemployed on 3CR Radical Radio. Coming up next is The Black Block, and we'll let you go with another song right after we tell you about this community service and or announcement.
Do you have a few children's picture books or footy boots that your kids have outgrown but want to find them a loving home? We'll drop them in at 3CR and put them in the Books and Boots bin. Books and Boots regularly sends pre-loved children's picture books and sports footwear to remote and regional First Nations communities and children across the country. Contact us at Books and Boots or go to the website www.booksandboots.org.au. We love a good book.